You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of essays by Rudolf Steiner that were introductions to Goethe's scientific writings, entitled Nature's Open Secret. This is Chapter 15, entitled On the Subjectivity of Sensory Perceptions. I am not writing this account just because an edition of Goethe's works must include his theory of color, along with a suitable introduction. Instead, it arises because of my own deeper need for clarity. I myself also began by studying mathematics and physics. But the numerous contradictions involved in our modern views of nature have forced me to undertake a critical investigation of their methodological foundations. My earlier studies led me in the direction of strictly empirical knowledge. My awareness of those numerous contradictions, however, called for a rigorous scientific epistemology. My empirical starting point safeguarded me from reverting to Hegel's purely conceptual constructions. Finally, with the help of my epistemological studies, I found that the source of many errors in modern natural science is the erroneous function attributed to simple sensory perception. Science today attributes all sensory qualities, parenthesis sound, color, warmth, and so on, close parenthesis, to the subject, and assumes that beyond the subject, the only thing that corresponds to such qualities are material movement. These processes of movement, alleged to be the only thing that exists in this, quote, realm of nature, close quote, can, of course, no longer be perceived, but they are inferred from the subjective qualities. Yet, when we consider this conclusion carefully, its inconsistency becomes obvious. The concept of motion was borrowed initially from the sensory world. That is, we encounter it only in things that have sensory qualities. We have no experience of motion except through sensory objects. If we extend this assumption to entities that are not sense perceptible, as the elements of discontinuous matter or atoms are supposed to be, we must become truly aware that by extending this concept, we are transferring an attribute known through the senses to a very different, imperceptible form of existence. We face the same contradiction when we attempt to find actual meaning in the initially empty concept of the atom. We have no choice but to endow it with sensory qualities, no matter how sublimated. One scientist describes the atom as impenetrable or as a force. Another describes it as having extension in space, and so on. Always some characteristic borrowed from the sensory realm. And without these attributes, our concepts would be completely meaningless. Herein lies the inconsistency. We draw a line through the center of the perceptual world and declare one side objective and the other subjective. To be consistent, we would have to say that if atoms exist at all, they must simply be particles of matter and have material qualities, and the only reason we fail to perceive them is their minute size, which makes them unavailable to our senses. This eliminates the possibility of juxtaposing the motion of atoms as something objective to subjective qualities such as sound and color. It also guarantees that in the relationship between a motion and the sensation of, for example, red, we would simply find two events completely within the realm of the senses. Consequently, it also becomes clear to this author that the motion of the ether, the position of atoms, and so on, belong to the same category as sensory perceptions themselves. Footnote, ether here refers to an all-pervading, infinitely elastic, massless medium, formerly postulated by physics as the medium for the propagation of electromagnetic waves. Editor, end of footnote. To characterize sensory perceptions as subjective is merely the result of fuzzy thinking. If we assert that sensory qualities are subjective, then we must also say this of the movement of the ether. If we fail to perceive the motion of the ether, it is not because of a principle, but simply because our senses are not organized finely enough. This, however, is contingent only on external circumstances. It is quite possible that through an increasing refinement of the sense organs, human beings may eventually be able to perceive the ether directly. If people in that distant future were to accept the doctrine of the subjectivity of sensations, they would also have to declare the motion of the ether subjective, just as people today do color and sound and so on. As we can see, this physical theory leads to an impossible contradiction. The view that sense perceptions are subjective is further supported by physiological considerations. Physiology tells us that perception arises as the result of a mechanical process outside of our body that is communicated to nerve endings in the sense organs. From there, it is transmitted to the central nervous system, where it finally triggers a sensation. I have described the contradictions of this theory elsewhere in this book, chapter 17. The only aspect in this process that can be called subjective is the form of movement within the substance of the brain. No matter how far we may go in investigating the processes in the subject, we always remain in the mechanical realm, and sensations will never be found in the brain. Therefore, we have no choice but to resort to philosophical considerations to become clear about the subjectivity and objectivity of sensation. These considerations lead to the thoughts that follow. What exactly does subjective mean in terms of perception? We will not get anywhere unless we come up with a precise analysis of subjective as a concept. Subjectivity, of course, can be determined only by itself. We cannot call anything subjective that is not proven to be determined by the subject. We must now ask, what can we describe as belonging to the human subject? Only what a person can experience personally through inner or outer perception. Through outer perception, we can investigate our bodily constitution, and through inner perception, we can apprehend our thinking, feeling, and willing. In the case of outer perception, what would we classify as subjective? Our whole bodily constitution, including the sense organs and the brain, which probably vary somewhat from person to person. What we discover in this way are the particular arrangements and functions of the substances as they mediate our sensations. The subjective aspect in this case involves only the path that the sensation must follow before it can be called my sensation. Our organization transmits the sensation, and these pathways are subjective. The sensation itself, however, is not. Now let us consider inner experience. What do I experience internally when I describe a sensation as my own? I observe that I make the connection between the sensation and my individuality through thinking, and that I expand my awareness to include that sensation. But I am not aware of producing the content of the sensation. I only establish a connection with myself. The quality of the sensation is a factor that is grounded in itself. No matter where we start, whether inside or outside, we never reach the point where we can say, here we have the subjective character of sensations. The concept of subjectivity cannot be applied to the content of a sensation. These are the considerations that forced me to consider any theory of nature to be impossible, that on principle goes beyond the realm of the perceived world, and that have led me to embrace the sensory world as the only object of natural science. I then had to look for what we call natural laws in the interdependency of this sensory world. This is what led me to the view of the scientific method that lies at the foundation of Goethe's color theory. Those who agree with these considerations will read this color theory with eyes very different from those of conventional scientists today. They will see that it is not really a matter of conflict between the hypotheses of Goethe and Newton, but a question of whether contemporary theoretical physics is acceptable. If it is not, then neither is its view of the theory of color. In the following chapters, readers will become acquainted with what we see as the theoretical foundations of physics. This will provide a basis for viewing Goethe's work in the proper light. The end of chapter 15.